It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. You can find out more about the program at our website, jeffexchange.org. We provide program topics and recordings once those topics have aired, and a look ahead to next editions of the Jefferson Exchange. This is part of a much broader menu of options than you used to get at the larger website, ijpr.org. Check it out. It was overhauled in late September, and we're pretty proud of what we're able to do there. And give us a look. That's all at ijpr.org, and for the program, jeffexchange.org. Jefferson Exchange also maintains a presence on Facebook and on Twitter as well, and you can find us at either one of those services online. And you can take part in our conversations as they happen. Here are the phone numbers, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Early last week, the governors of all three West Coast states sat down at a table together with a representative of the Premier of British Columbia to sign an agreement on climate change and how to approach it. Efforts on climate change legislation on a national level are pretty much frozen in Congress, so California, Oregon, Washington, and BC will work together. It's not the first time for such an agreement. Let's talk about what might emerge from this agreement. The group Environment California supports the concept of the states and British Columbia working together. Dan Jacobson is legislative director at Environment California and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
A lot of groups that use either the term environment or California. Tell us what it is that your group seeks to do.
We're a group that's looking to promote clean air, clean water, and protect the beautiful places in California. And our sister group is Environment Oregon, up in Oregon.
And I imagine both groups then are in support of the idea of regional efforts on climate change?
Certainly. I mean, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, this action is stalled in Congress. But the problem is obviously that the scientists are telling us that we need to take action today to curb the worst impacts of global warming. And the agreement that was signed last week by the three governors and the premier from British Columbia certainly sets out a process for how to do that and starts to make an agreement where states will look and depend upon each other for the different ways to reduce the amount of carbon that's being produced.
You know, just in terminology, as I look at the website for Environment California, I notice that that climate change is obviously the popular term these days, but you're sticking with global warming. What do you make of the fact that it has moved from a discussion of global warming to the more nebulous climate change?
I think it's just a different way that people are impacted by it. And so it isn't just that the planet might be getting warmer in some places, the planet might be getting colder in some places, it's going to rain more in some places, we're going to see more of a drought. So I think the term has been updated to sort of show that we probably need to update our webpage.
All right. The you point out on that webpage that California is the world's 12th largest source of global warming pollution. Does any other state even come close?
Well, California, because of its size, is sort of the biggest one in the in terms of the country. Other states that would come close would be Texas and other big population centers, but California holds that dubious distinction right now.
So what kinds of things, well, let me back up a little bit to what's happening in Congress or not happening in Congress, as the case may be. Has anything actually been introduced and at least gotten a committee hearing in this Congress in terms of climate change legislation?
There have been bills introduced. I think Congressman Waxman has a bill. I'm sure I would then guess that Congressman from Oregon have also supported it, but there's just no actioning happening in Congress right now. I mean, between the splits of the two parties, I don't think either side is going to have the ability to have a big impact on climate change this year, and then we'll have to see about next year.
So given that, that Congress appears to be not in a position to do much of anything at this point, what logical moves, what would be some of the real sample moves that, that the three states and British Columbia working together could embrace all at one time?
Well, I think there's a number of proposals that were laid out in the agreement that they signed. The first is looking at a low-carbon fuel standard. So that's something that California has implemented and that I think Oregon and Washington could implement. There are different programs to figure out the ways that the industries can reduce the amount of carbon that they're using, whether it's a carbon tax, which was done in British Columbia, whether it's a cap and trade program that's been set up here in California. And it'll be up to the legislatures and the governors for Oregon and for Washington to figure out which of any of those things they're going to adopt. But certainly at the signing ceremony, they both seem to be saying we wanted to move in that direction.
Just in process, is this somewhat daunting to someone like you? I mean, you're used to twisting some arms as legislative director in California. Pardon me. I mean, trying to convince people of certain things. I didn't mean to go a little overboard with the terminology there. But the point is that you're lobbying people, trying to convince them that the efforts you're putting in front of them are good things to follow along with. But now you're talking about extending this outside of California and trying to get two other states and the province of British Columbia involved. Does trying to coordinate the efforts of approaching the legislatures, to say nothing of what goes on in the legislatures themselves, just add a great level of complexity to all this?
Sure, but I think this is something that the governors are coming to almost on their own, is they really see the opportunity that fighting climate change has to not only do something about this problem right now and to take leadership in that direction, but if they, I think the governors from Oregon and from Washington are looking at the success that California has had, not only in helping to fight climate change, but also helping to look at some of the economic positive things that have come out of it. So the clean air and is obviously an economic benefit, but the clean industries that have started to place themselves in California, whether it's solar or wind or energy efficiency, are really helping California to move out of the economic recession that we've been in. And I think other governors, not only these particular ones on the West Coast, but other eastern governors, too, are sort of looking at this and going, this is going to be a win-win for us. It's good for us to get out of the economic doldrums, and it's good to clean up our air and to reduce the impacts of climate.
Dan Jacobson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's with the group Environment California as legislative director. We're talking about the recently signed agreement between the governors of California, Oregon, Washington, and the premier of British Columbia to work together for regional solutions on climate change. Join us with your thoughts, comments, questions for Dan about the issue generally, or more specifically about the climate change agreements. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Obviously, the sitting down and signing papers is the easy part. You mentioned that there were some proposals that are laid out. Given what has happened in California already, California seems to be at least a year or two ahead of the other states in this. Is it going to be a process, you think, of having to wait for the other states to catch up to what California's done already?
I don't think that California will wait. There's programs that deal with helping to electrify California's transportation system that are really popular, that are moving through the California legislature and with the governor's office. So I don't know if it's necessarily a race as much as each state just doing as much as they can to help curb the worst impacts of this.
What about the efforts to convince people? It seems like perhaps the tide is turning. I don't know what it feels like from where you are, but the idea of climate change deniers seems to be perhaps at last ebbing. But is that still an issue that you're dealing with on a regular basis?
I don't think so. I think that's been exposed really as sort of bad industry science, if you will, and a lot of it has been funded by special interest groups who have an interest in helping to not tackle that problem. And the more that that's been exposed over the years, I think that's one thing that's helped to turn the tide. The other is that people are starting to experience the impacts of climate change. And whether it's because they're living in a place that's getting drenched in rain that they haven't had before, and that those rainstorms seem to be coming more often and seem to be a lot worse, whether it's droughts that are seem to be longer and seem to be drier, whether it's hurricanes, whether it's tornadoes. This is no longer an isolated incident where you're going, islands in the middle of the Pacific are going to be impacted by this. But Americans are being impacted by climate on a regular basis. And I think they're actually starting to think about, what am I going to have to do? Am I going to have to change the windows on my house? Am I going to have to take action to start to prepare for a storm or some kind of an impact that could be significantly worse than it ever has been in the past 100 or 150 years.
Is it still difficult to convince people to take actions today that might benefit them 20, 40, 60 years down the road?
I think it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but I think there's people are starting to look at this and more think of it from a almost a survival perspective of if a storm like this hits, we need to be ready. And a lot of the changes that they're going to make in their house, whether it's weatherizing their houses, whether it's changing their windows, improving their doors, also happen to be ways to cut a significant amount of energy use out of their home. So you're getting a double benefit.
Now, there have been previous regional agreements, haven't there, Dan Jacobson?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, this is an ongoing thing. I think every time we get a new governor in, you know, people like to put their own stamp on it and have an impact on this issue.
Oh, and Jay Inslee, of course, is the newest governor of the bunch, having gotten elected in Washington a year ago.
Sure.
All right. So, but are there any particular differences in overall trends in discussion of overall approaches between this pact recently signed and any that might have come before?
I think people are focused more on transportation than they have been in the past. People have been looking at electricity, and you've seen real improvements there, whereas California, I think, you know, recently signed a program where we're going to generate a third of our electricity from clean energy sources by 2020. And a lot of people have looked at that, but in this particular agreement, you're seeing a lot of focus on transportation, whether it's high-speed rail, making sure that the fuels that we're using are using as little carbon as possible, and also figuring out ways to electrify the transportation system, like cars, freight, light rail, more public transportation.
Does it appear that California is going to make that goal of getting a third of its electricity from clean energy by 2020?
Oh, we will certainly make that goal. Oh, well, I shouldn't say certainly, but we're on pace to meet that goal. The bigger question is, can we meet the goal that was put in place by AB 32, which was the first law that California passed to really meet the targets that science says we have to meet, which was a 20% reduction in CO2 by 2020 and an 80% reduction by 2050. And there's recent reports that have come out from Lawrence Livermore and some of the universities here in California saying, you know, we'll probably get to the 20% by 2020, but if we want to get to the 50% or to the 80% by 2050, we have to start taking more, some larger steps in order to meet that goal. So being able to reduce your carbon by 20%, there's a lot of so-called low-hanging fruit that you can do, but being able to reduce it by 80% is going to take some real changes in the way that we light our homes, in the way that we move from point A to point B.
Dan Jacobson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the legislative director at the group Environment California. It is the companion agency to Environment Oregon. We're talking about the Climate Change Pact signed by the governors of all three West Coast states and the premier of British Columbia. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange about climate change, global warming, call it what you will. What's the proper approach here? Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the low-hanging fruit, this is an interesting concept then, because we're talking about the things that are easily achievable done up front, and then it takes more effort to get those last few percentage points. If we're talking about actually reducing CO2 emissions of 80% by the year 2050 in California, one of the major arguments, even for people who don't necessarily call themselves climate change deniers, though, is that you're going to bring about economic pain and dislocation by trying to reach those targets. What's the general response to that?
Well, the first general response, I think, is fairly obvious. If we do nothing, the economic pain, the human pain is going to be, huge. Look at the economic pain caused by Superstorm Sandy. Look at the, economic and just tragic pain caused by the hurricanes that hit Louisiana. Look at the economic pain and the terrible impacts that we're having on the droughts in the Southwest, places like Texas. So to put your head in the sand and act like if we do nothing, this problem will go away is going to bring the worst economic impacts that we've ever seen. By taking steps now and moving our economy toward a clean energy economy where we can promote and solar industry and the wind industry. That's a smarter step to take right now, and one that we should be engaging not only all over the West Coast, but, you know, we'd argue all over the country, and get America to move toward a clean energy economy that creates jobs, that creates tax revenue for the government, that creates less pollution, and is what we're ultimately going to have to do. So the options are either sort of wait until we have extracted every last drop of oil and fossil fuels from the ground and strip mined and clear cut and done everything like that, or to start to make a orderly and smooth transition now. And given between those two choices, I think that's why you're seeing economists and scientists and Nobel laureates continuing to say it's time to start moving in this direction now. And the longer that we wait, the worse it's going to be.
Let's take some calls. Here's Pam in Dexter, Oregon. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Jacobson from Environment California.
Hi. Well, I'm reading Bill McKibben's latest book, Oil and Honey, and it's pretty startling, the figures, because they're saying that we have 565 gigatons that we need to keep out of, that we need to...
Remove or keep out in the first place?
Well, so there's 2,795 gigatons of carbon already figured into the economy that is still in the ground. And he's saying that we can only put 565 gigatons into the atmosphere over, like, the next 10 years. So it's five times the amount of carbon that they're already planning to take out than the Earth can sustain to keep it under 2 degrees, which I guess is the universal agreement that even the U.S. and the fossil fuel industry controlled countries are in agreement of. So his thing is, you know, it's a huge financial detriment for the fossil fuel industry to get behind a carbon tax. But my question is more for this region, since this is California, Washington, and Oregon, as well as British Columbia, is deforestation and carbon sequestration, and how the private timber industry is carbon neutral because they cut so many trees that they aren't getting any carbon sequestered. It's just neutral. Whereas on the public forest lands, we are sequestering carbon, and our forests are some of the best at sequestering carbon. So I would like to see something in this legislation that would include getting carbon credits for the sequestration of the carbon from our forestry practices on public lands, and somehow make the private timber industry and private lands adhere to the Northwest Forest Plan. And is there any talk on that issue? And I'll listen on the radio. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Pam. Appreciate it.
Well, I'll take the first crack at that. There is talk about that. And, you know, the caller raises a really interesting point, which is, can you receive credits for being able to manage our forests in a sustainable fashion? And, you know, that's something that I think the different legislatures are going to have to work out. But here in California, I can tell you that's a really interesting debate about how best to manage our forests and how do you give credits for that. You don't want to give credits for something that's ultimately going to end up hurting your public lands. But in places where you can manage it and ensure that it's being done in a sustainable fashion, people are trying to figure that out. So it's a really good question, and you know, there's no sort of one answer that fits each state or sort of the whole region as a whole, and I think they'll have to work that out on a state-by-state basis.
Well, the timber industry still does maintain some political power in both Oregon and Washington, and perhaps even more so in British Columbia, as I understand, so that will be interesting to watch. In talking about carbon in the atmosphere, that was just yesterday that the new figures came out, and groups like 350.org are advocating 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere as about the top you want to reach. And as of last year, the UN measures us at 393.1 parts per million, so quite a bit above the 350 mark at this point. Mary in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dan Jacobson from Environment California. Mary, go ahead.
Oh, hi, yes. My question was about if there was any thought to regulating methane. My understanding is that it's much more deleterious to the environment than carbon, and it has a much shorter lifespan. It only lasts for like 30 days to 6 months, where carbon can last as long as 100 years in the environment, in the atmosphere. So I was wondering if there's any thought about regulating methane coming from the fracking. And surprisingly, animal farms produce a lot of methane.
All right, so fracking and farms. All right, thanks for that, Mary. Appreciate it. Regulations on methane. Dan Jacobson, anything in the hopper there?
I'm so glad that your caller said that, because we think this is actually one of the most important issues as we move forward on climate. She's basically exactly right with the stats, you know, that methane is a more potent climate gas than CO2 is. And the scary thing is, and even at the agreement that was signed with the three governors and the premier, there were protesters outside of that agreement arguing that you can't both be a climate champion and not be banning fracking in your state. And it's an incredibly big issue here in California, where the oil and gas industry is eager to be able to frack into the Monterey Shale and other parts around California. And we are looking to educate the governor right now and to tell him, you know, if really, as you say, that global warming is the greatest existential problem of our time and that we need to combat it, and we applaud him for signing agreements like this, he also needs to take steps, and I would encourage the other governors of the other states to do it as well, to take steps to figure out how to not frack in their state. Because we've seen that that exactly what the caller said is that the methane releases from fracking are incredibly dangerous, and I think will send us backwards when we start talking about how do we deal with climate.
Dan Jacobson, there was a certain ho-humness about some of the coverage about the governors getting together to sign this climate pact. Is that a good thing in the sense that it's people are taking it for granted now that there will be action?
Well, I was assuming that the ho-humness was that this agreement does not have the force of law behind it. And so, you know, it's sort of like, you know, people are just kind of saying, yes, this is a huge problem and we have to do something about it. What's needed now is that the governors need to use their political muscle back in their states to force the legislatures to take action so that you can get a force of law. Executive orders and laws need to be implemented to take the ideas that were in that agreement and make them reality.
All right, lots of work ahead for all three governors and the Premier of British Columbia and their respective legislatures. Dan Jacobson is the Environment California Legislative Director. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Good to have you.